Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
Midterm election related information here in the U.S. And last week, I want to do a little review from last week. We have been looking at, well, we looked at the Elijah List's article, and the Elijah List, of course, is a list of false prophets for profit who you can get your specialized prophecies from or what have you. But anyway, we spoke a little bit about Steve Schultz's, he's the head of Elijah's List, article called What Happens When Prophets Miss an Election Prophecy. And so we looked into Charlie Shamp's false prophecy about the midterm elections and how they tried to excuse it. And I went over that last week, so I'm not going to review that. But then we went ahead and got our foot in the door with Relevant Magazine and looked at a couple of the ads in there. One was for Hillsong, Brian Houston, Bobby Houston are the pastors, and he is on the Elijah List. We looked at another ad in Relevant Magazine. Again, I'm just reviewing, so I'm not going into a lot, massive detail of which magazine and all that. You can look in last week's archives, our last program. But an advertisement for the One Thing Conference in 2016, which included Mike Bickle and others. And, of course, Mike Bickle also is on the Elijah List, actually the list of false prophets. But from there, we went on to look at some of the things pertaining to movements that go hand in hand with the Brownsville, I mean, with, I'm sorry, with the Elijah List type phenomenon and things related to Relevant Magazine, which, of course, is the worst of both worlds, you know, political left-wing so-called Christian Christianity, and then, of course, the extreme charismatic teachers, false prophets, etc., that you find in the individuals who I just named from the Relevant Magazine and the Elijah List. And so we looked at some of these things, and I had also mentioned some of the, I shared about the link with some of the false revival movements, like the Toronto Blessing, which also known as, well, the Toronto Blessing was in Canada, Brownsville Revival, which was in the Panhandle in Florida down there, Pensacola, Florida. And I had mentioned that there was a lady in Malta who had linked, that I met on a missions trip, who had linked these two, the Toronto Blessing and the Brownsville Revival, with the Holy Trinity Brompton Church in London, where she had visited. And I had brought all that up, you know, because I ended up visiting all three locations after Malta. Then I went to London, and of course there's a reason why I'm going there and all of this, because I hope to share an article called A London Calling in the Relevant Magazine that talks about this very Holy Trinity Brompton. So anyway, that was kind of the context of all this, that if you were in last week, you kind of know where I'm coming from. If not, I'm doing the best I can to bring you up to snuff here. But this lady had told me that that all of these movements, including her trip over to Holy Trinity Brompton in London, were linked. And of course my comment was, yeah, they're linked, but not by the Holy Spirit, but by a false spirit or seducing spirits. And I bring all of that up, or I was bringing that up because I was tying it to the Elijah List false prophets people, now which were tied to the election. Now, so it all ties together there somewhere, doesn't it, folks? Anyway, I wanted to review some comments from Larry Thomas's article from Inkhorn newsletter years ago. Larry's with the Lord now, but and then another article as well. So I'm going to read these articles, and again, this is a review of last week, showing the link between several of these movements. The one article is called "The Brownsville Revival: The Toronto Link Grows Stronger," And this article goes on to say, Toronto connection becomes clear. Anyone who claims that Pensacola is not merely Toronto recycled is not being totally honest. Revival historian Andrew Strom of New Zealand makes that clear. The links between Toronto and Pensacola are so strong that I am surprised that they are not more widely known. Evangelist Steve Hill has acknowledged that he has spent, who's also passed away, by the way, has acknowledged that he had spent considerable time with the leader of the Toronto movement at the Holy Trinity Brompton Church in London. Pastor John Kilpatrick, of course, he's the guy at the Toronto, he was the pastor of the Toronto Church, the Toronto Airport Church, formerly a vineyard that, anyway, went on to be infamous because of the Toronto blessing. He defended in his book, John Kilpatrick did, the same manifestations that were prevalent at Toronto went on in Holy Trinity, Brompton. Anyway, and then evangelist Steve Hill acknowledged that he spent time over there, as I mentioned. Charisma Magazine has endorsed the Brownsville Revival and made no bones about linking it with Toronto. Under the headline, and of course we've talked about Charisma much in the past, under the headline, Toronto Blessing Spreads Worldwide, the magazine made this observation. Springfield, Missouri, home to the Assemblies of God headquarters, was considered resistant to the Toronto Blessing. That began to change in June when Brownsville pastor John Kilpatrick held special services at Central Assembly of God next to Assembly of God headquarters. Pro-Pensacola writer Beth McDuffie made the connection quickly. She wrote, as people went forward, they began to fall down, shaking and crying, etc., just like Toronto meetings everywhere. As we noted in the Issues and Insights column of our October issue, the new head of the Assemblies of God Men's Ministries sees Toronto, Brownsville, Hill, and Rodney Brown, Howard Brown as all part of the same move. Only a few diehards are trying to create a gulf between Toronto and Pensacola that just does not exist. And of course, this article is from a few years back, as some of the key people, including the writer of the author, are gone. Larry Thomas with the Lord, as I mentioned. But I wanted to make a point, and the next article I want to read from, Hope from Above is the website. There's no author or really even a title, but it's just this is what it's concerning. Fits right in here. The Toronto Blessing began at the airport church, now called Catch the Fire, when pastors John and Carol Arnott were inspired by revivals in Argentina, led by Claudio Frisden, and in South Africa. They invited Randy Clark of St. Louis, Missouri, to minister at the church in January 1994. I think he was also with a vineyard at the time. Randy Clark has been influenced by the ministry of Rodney Howard Brown. Of course, he was the laughing revival guy. A South African preacher, founder of the Rodney Howard Brown Evangelical Association in Louisville, Kentucky, and the earliest known proponent of the Holy Laughter Revival phenomenon. Although I might say earliest known proponent in our modern history of the Holy Laughter. Throughout, you know, Pentecostal church history, there's been a Holy Laughter phenomenon that took place. Clark preached at the airport church for 2 months, starting January 20th, and introduced some of Howard Brown's approach into TACF, Toronto Airport Christian Fellowship, practice. Toronto Airport Catch the Fire practice. That's what those letters mean. In that first revival service, there were about 120 people in attendance, Arnett recalled, that most members fell on the floor, laughing, rolling, and carrying on. During that first year, the church's size tripled to 1,000 members, and meetings were held every night except on Mondays as the revival's influence spread. Reports of similar revivals emerged from Atlanta, Anaheim, St. Louis, several Canadian sites, Cambodia, and Albania. It was common for visitors to carry the influence of the revival back to their home congregations, and two notable British cases in point being Holy Trinity Brompton and Holy Trinity Cheltenham, areas that have become known for Toronto Blessing-type revivals worldwide include Pensacola, Florida, home of the Brownsville Revival, Bath, England, and Cagayan de Oro City, Philippines. So I'm all caught up here, I believe, with what I wanted to be caught up with before we moved ahead to the article about entitled "London Calling." And again, I'm going to, as I have the opportunity, move on to some other election-related information, you know, political-type stuff, which also has a toxic spiritual side to it as well. But anyway, this is from the Relevant magazine, and I want to get that date if I can. July, August 2016, and the article is called "London Calling." So I want to comment a bit on the article. James Dwyer wrote the article, and as I mentioned, the lady from Malta that I met, she had visited, or I visited Malta after I talked to her, after she told me about it. Now, it says, from the outside, London's Holy Trinity Brompton Anglican Church looks like a traditional cathedral, but behind its walls, a revolution is happening. Can the church, known as HTB, transform one of the most secular societies in the world? It says, for American eyes, Holy Trinity Brompton, a church in the heart of London, looks stunning and powerful. Tucked away off the city's busy Brompton Road, its historic cathedral-like architecture and affluent Knightsbridge district surroundings give it an iconic, distinctly British feel. But behind its walls, something truly remarkable is happening. There in the heart of a country seeing Christianity become less and less influential, a resurgence is taking place. Last year, the former Archbishop of Canterbury, Lord George Carey, told the Daily Mail, and this was, of course, in 2015, that the church was one generation away from extinction. HTB is spearheading a revolution. They're bringing Christianity back to English culture and might just be reversing the trend. Of course, I would say they're bringing a perversion of Christianity back to English culture. So that's what's the danger here, is that in a dying Christian culture in England, a counterfeit is being brought forth, and many are trying to, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, who I assume is not a real discerning fellow. Anyway, it says, when you enter, it says something different here. When you enter a service at HTB, you could be forgiven if you forgot you're in an Anglican church. You can't help but notice the lack of formality. Now, moving on in the article, it says, of course, you won't walk away without being struck by HTB's charismatic vicar, Nicky Gumbel, who assumed the leadership of HTB in 2005. The 61-year-old is humble and open. His own sincerity and passion bleeds over into the church he leads. Since 2005, it has exploded into a mega church. The Christian community, moving on in the article, in England, has historically been one of the most influential voices in the global church. But in recent years, a crisis has been unfolding. The Church of England is declining at free fall speeds. According to reports that came out this spring, the Anglican Church loses 12 followers for every one conversion. And even among the Roman Catholic Church, the trend holds. They lose about 12 members for every conversion. These figures illustrate the challenge facing a church whose congregations are aging as the millennial generation increasingly spurns organized religion. Anyone who follows church trends is aware that so-called nuns, in other words, none of these, you know, they choose that category of I'm none of these type religions or churches. Anyone who follows church trends is aware that so-called nuns who don't identify with the religion are on the rise. In May, the Church of England's finance chief, John Spence, said the church's decline is expected to continue for decades. If Christianity is going to survive in the UK for another generation, millennials will have to re-embrace the faith, even if it looks different than their parents' church experience. I would say viva la difference. But, of course, Christ's church universal will survive because he promised that. The gates of hell would not prevail against his church. And if Christianity is going to survive in the UK, and I would say, you know, maybe curbing Muslim immigration might help a bit as well, since England's being overrun by radical Islam now, as is France, and unfortunately our own country in the U.S. might be heading in that direction as well. The article goes on. A new kind of church? Question mark. It says, for Gumbel, it's not about innovation or presenting a certain image. It's about finding the right way to present the unchanging message, he says. Gumbel pioneered the widely used Alpha Course, a set of resources and curricula that explore the Christian faith. And of course, the Alpha Course has been around for quite some time and has been critiqued by apologetic ministries, discernment ministries, and found wanting in several ways. We won't get into that here, but anyway, the Alpha Course, I did want to, I'm glad the article mentions Gumbel's connection to that. Much like the church it comes from, Alpha is not like anything you'd normally associate with church curriculum, which is why it has exploded with over 29 million people participating globally. The courses are based on down-to-earth conversations about Jesus and faith. I would say more theology, please. more theology, please. Less down-to-earth conversations. That's my little two cents there. Anyway, goes on to say, not just theology lessons. In other words, based on down-to-earth conversations about Jesus and faith. Like many things HTB, Holy Trinity Brompton, does, Alpha is about speaking the language of the culture instead of forcing the culture to conform to old traditions. How about just preaching to the culture its need to conform to the Word of God? How about that? Anyway, I would say it's all about compromise. HTB has embraced social activism. Wow, there's a real surprise. And campaigns to help those in need in their communities. They put an emphasis on evangelism. All right, now the next part of this article, let's see. Okay, Uniting the Divided. Gumbel's commitment to the unchanging message of the gospel means that he and HTB have come to the conclusion that in order to reach people, the historically fractured church in Western Europe needs to unify. Okay, we need unity. What is the barrier to the re-evangelization of the nation, he asks? Everyone fighting each other. If we're going to do it, we have got to work together, and it's just not going to happen if the churches are fighting each other. That's why he spent the better part of the last several years calling for a truce between formerly bitter factions of the church. Nowhere was this on display more than at last year's HTB leadership conference. There, Gumbel shared a stage with Ranerio Cantalamessa, a Catholic priest, and Joyce Meyer, a speaker and author with ties to the American Charismatic Movement. Of course, we know Joyce Meyer is a Word Faith heretical teacher who's very popular here in the States, and then of course we know the Catholic Church is a false representation of Christianity, that the gospel of Catholicism is not the gospel of the Bible. And I would just say that Gumbel obviously has no discernment whatsoever in his desire to come to a truce with bitter factions of the church and be unified. So he wants to be unified with the Catholic Church, with Word Faith, but that doesn't surprise me because I'm pretty confident Gumbel already probably believes some of those elements of charisma. It says, in an unprecedented move, they, along with others, called for unity among different streams of Christianity. Finally, the last part of the article, the London Revolution. HTB isn't alone in its efforts to bring Christianity back to prominence in London. Hillsong London, of course, we mentioned Hillsong earlier, and their participation on the Elijah false prophet list, and Jesus House are both large churches within the capital. And I might throw in a dash of Word Faith heresy in the Hillsong movement as well. So for those of you who want to know more about Relevant Magazine, or what I like to affectionately call Irrelevant Magazine, Spiritually Irrelevant Magazine, there you have it. Now I want to shift gears a bit. And I had the opportunity, actually it's been a while back, it's been probably, you know, I'd say maybe a couple months now, to hear a great interview on Janet Mefford's radio station with author Daniel J. Flynn. And this segue I'm making actually does connect well with the political liberalism that we've spoken of for the last several podcasts. And in this interview, it tells about Jim Jones being in bed with the California Democratic Party in general, and particularly the intersecting lives of sodomite Harvey Milk, who was a big political Democrat in San Francisco, and, you know, intersecting lives of Milk and Jones. This further confirmed what I know about the cult leader and his work with the Democrats. I've been doing a lot of podcasts on progressives, emergents, and contemplatives now, and other liberal Christian wolves for some time off and on. I did one about a year and a half ago about my observations of Jonestown survivor Laura Johnson Cole. And so, you know, in the next follow-up podcast, the next couple of podcasts, I want to be looking at Daniel Flynn and his book, Cult City, and a couple of interviews, other interviews that he did. I was actually, unfortunately, I could not find the Mefford interview. I looked all over the internet and I could not quite find it. So I found a couple of other interviews that were done with Mr. Daniel Flynn. And I actually have some notes, in fact, that I want to share from that interview. But I just wanted to kind of bring you into what we're going to be looking at the next couple podcasts. We still have some time left, so I can pursue this a little bit further today. On this, then this interview that was the, that was, and also what I want to do is I want to look at Daniel Flynn and the Cult City book and some of that information from some articles that I have, as well as the interview that was done. And then I want to look at Laura Johnston Cole, who, as I said, I had heard here in my hometown speak at one of the local universities, who was a survivor of Jonestown. And that she was actually featured in an interview by Susan Puzio, one of our Rapture Ready radio hosts on her program. And anyway, it seemed providential because I saw, wow, she's interviewing that woman that I had heard some time ago locally. And I thought, yeah, then you know what? I think I'm going to share a little bit more information about her. You know, this is, or at least, you know, this year, 2018, is the 40th anniversary of Jonestown, the Jim Jones cult's massacre, if you want to call it that, the mass suicide that took place in Guyana. So anyway, both of these individuals, Daniel Flynn and Laura Johnson Cole, I will be doing first the information I want to give to you and share with you. Actually, I got it backwards, sorry. First, I want to look at the information I have on Laura Johnson Cole, and then we will look at the Daniel Flynn information. Sorry about that. From the prophetic news program of Susan Puzio, and again, we'll see how far we get today with this. She she was actually, and still is, claims to be an atheist. Okay, she said she was always an activist, and back in the 60s, she of course loved Martin Luther King and the Kennedys, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, and from the time they were shot, since they were shot, she didn't want the world run by bullies, so she wanted to have a more enlightened view and help people have a more enlightened view, and so she's always a much a political activist, this lady. And so in her search on how to impact the world without being victimized, which of course she ultimately was by Jones, she had that kind of idealism that you'll find, you know, typically in a liberal. She worked with Black Panthers, and she said that they had a wonderful food program for children. I you know, in the circles I run in, I don't often hear the Black Panthers as described as having wonderful programs. If, for those of you who are not old enough to remember, the Black Panthers were a violent, a revolutionary group back in the 60s, back in my heyday, when the Weathermen, they were also a really fine group that were blowing up people in the name of revolution. and the Black Panthers were killing people. So anyway, she got hooked up with them, and she thought they had a wonderful program. They were great role models, feeding the children and all that. And I don't dispute that they were feeding the children and all that. But anyway, she still thinks it was great. She has pleasant memories. And she worked in the welfare department in Connecticut. And excuse me, you know, the Black Panthers opened up the next door for her because they worked right near the welfare department in Connecticut. She didn't seem to learn much, I would say, about liberalism, because of course, as I heard her speak at the university, she had a lot of fond memories of liberalism, if not fond memories of Jim Jones, of course, which she didn't. But anyway, she said she was pretty naive, and I would say she probably still is, and you need to pray for this woman. Try to remember Laura Johnson Cole, as she's still around, you know, sharing her story of surviving Jonestown. She went to Woodstock. She joined the People's Temple in 1970. Jim Jones, at the time, was connected to the radicals like Angela Davis and Peter Chavez. Leaders that she looked up to, very radical leaders, I might add. Angela Davis was also, she was associated, I think, with the Black Panthers, but very revolutionary, very much into violence to, you know, achieve their goals. She looked up to these folks, and, you know, they hadn't been shot or killed, and Jim Jones was connected to them, so that impressed her. And she described them as people who were very progressive. You know, you hear that a lot about progressive Christianity nowadays, and that should be a tip-off. But anyway, even progressive insurance folks, I'd watch out for that one too. But anyway, Jones called himself God. I'm going from some notes from the interview that Susan did. Jones called himself God. Actually, I recall when I did my podcast that Father Divine, a cult leader of his day, influenced Jones as he visited Father Divine's compound and learned a few tricks of the trade of how to be an effective cult leader, except that he ended up, you know, having all his people kill themselves. That's something Father Divine didn't. But anyway, I'm running out of time here, it looks like. But Jim Jones was from my home state of Indiana, from Lynn, Indiana, near Indianapolis. And I still got a little time. He and his wife were the first couple to adopt a black child, being non-black people, in the state of Indiana. He was involved with the Disciples of Christ, who to this day are a very liberal organization or denomination, and was an ordained minister. I'm going to cut off now, and I'm going to ask you to join me next week as we continue to look at Jim Jones and the connection with today's liberalism, both politically and spiritually. God bless you all, and good night.